Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about 2020's The Midnight Sky, directed by and starring George Clooney. Brother Jay, you're the reason for this particular season.
I am to blame for this.
Okay, so tell me about your introduction to this movie.
You and I alternate back and forth. Well, all three of us alternate back and forth with this. One week, maybe my pick. One week, maybe your pick. And then we have picks where it's all three of us together. And so we trade back and forth on choices. And so I have, to avoid the happenstance of constantly not knowing what to watch next, I just went through Netflix one night and I went through probably 30 movies and made a list for myself of things that I want to see that's in there. And so when it's my turn, I look at that list and I kind of pare it down and pick something on that list. And then I decide kind of what I want to proffer forward. So this week I just wanted something sci-fi and something that was different than what I've been watching.
And this had been one of your, because sometimes you pick a movie and sometimes you give me a list of to pick from. Kind of we both do that. So but this has been on the list a couple of times before. But this time you just said, no, we're doing it this time. And I was like, oh, cool. Because yeah, you know, I watch sci-fi movies with Jason. So it's like, yeah, fun.
Yeah. And I'm a sci-fi guy. I think Drew likes sci-fi, but I think not as much as me. So, which is fine. I just think, I don't know. I'm speculating. There's no eco waste. So
that's the thing is I watch horror movies with Drew and I watch sci-fi movies with you. You may both like each other genre, but that's my experience. So anyway, and you had not seen this movie before.
I'd never seen it before. I knew nothing about it other than the minute-ish preview that was on Netflix.
Okay.
So going into it, I knew next to nothing. I mean, I'd seen the preview, by the way, is just part of the movie in the first part. So it's not really a preview as much as it's just a segment of the movie, just a small capture. So, previews tend to be more encompassing. And this was just a small excerpt from the beginning of the movie. So. But I've thought that, you know, it looked interesting. It's obviously very small. It's a very small story as far as population. There's not a lot of characters.
It's a small story.
And the environment. I mean, there didn't have to be a lot of sets. Clearly, there didn't have to be a lot of sets. So. It was kind of fun. I thought it looked like it would be a fun sci-fi kind of different-ish movie. So, yeah.
And what did you think?
I thought it was okay. I think at the 15-minute mark, I guessed what was going on, and I told Jesse, I'm like, oh my god, is this what's going to happen? And he was like, no. And of course, I was right.
Yeah. So, turns out. Yeah. This. Okay.
This is a trope.
So my notes, my overall notes were, whoa boy, this movie. It's beautifully shot. Okay.
It's
acting is solid.
Yeah.
I love the diversity of the cast. But what are we doing? And then I read the elevator pitch that George Clooney gave.
Oh, because this is based on a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to go read the book because the book has got to be
better.
I hope
it's deeper.
I hope it's better.
Yeah. Oh, I have a very specific opinion about this movie. But here's the elevator pitch.
Okay.
He billed the project as Gravity meets The Revenant.
I have seen neither.
So. Yeah, neither have I. But he's telling two stories simultaneously. One is outer space a catastrophe, and the other is a on Earth catastrophe of like one man against nature, or a couple of characters against nature.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they're going on simultaneously. So instead of just the one Revenant, where I think it's I think Leonardo DiCaprio has sex with a bear. And then there's Gravity, where Sandra Bullock disappears into space forever. More or less. I don't know. Maybe they save her. I haven't seen the movie.
Okay. Oh, Good Morning Midnight. It is available at my library in audible format. Nice. I have just checked it out.
Yeah, it's Ta-da! Right in the same category as Good Night Moon.
So once I'm finished on the book that I'm listening to now, which is the... Mars Rover Curiosity, narrated by Bronson Pinchot, then I will take a stab at this book.
Nice. I'm listening to a gossip rag called 17 Carnations.
Okay.
Basically, was it Prince Edward and Wallace Simpson's connection to Adolf Hitler and Mussolini?
Oh.
And because I haven't seen The Crown, nor am I well-versed in British history, I don't know the 100 characters that are involved in this.
Well, I like The Crown. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I've watched it. It's fantastic. I don't know the accuracy of it. I mean, it's obviously got some poetic and creative license. So I don't know. Some of it's true.
I don't think we know the accuracy of any of it, right? I mean,
I think that's probably true.
Yeah, this is all like sort of history that,
literally palace intrigue.
Yeah, it would be prefer not to know the real story. It's in no one's interest within the story to tell the real story, is my understanding of it. Huh. But Prince Edward comes off, and I assume that's the guy with Wallace Simpson. Prince Edward comes off, they actually call him like a sort of a Peter Pan sort of character, where he's just traveling around the world like trying to find a bride or whatever, seducing women or having women throwing themselves at him. And mm-hmm. he doesn't really have any interest in being part of the court. And he's despondent and suicidal. And then like, you know, just like goes off on adventures far away. So he doesn't have to deal with his family. And then he meets the low class American divorcee. Anyway.
The Crown is fantastic. I recommend it. I resisted it because it's not normally my thing. I really don't have a lot of nostalgia for. I'm not really an Anglophile in that respect. So it didn't really strike me as something that would be in my wheelhouse. And then I think I was talking to Drew, and he had watched part of the first and second season, he was saying how good it was. And so I went and watched it, and it's fantastic.
Well, they have an amazing cast, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, John Lithgow plays Churchill.
Who plays Wallace Simpson?
Oh, I don't know her name.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, and then Gillian Anderson plays Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
Did an amazing job. I mean, just amazing. Yeah, so I think it's worth it. Again, it's hard to know.
Sure. Well, that's why, like I said, I'm reading. I'm like four chapters in, and we have yet to meet the. It's not quite World War II, so we'll see where the gossip goes. But I get the feeling that it's truly sort of a gossipy, now the story can be told kind of version of events. So who knows?
But. Yeah, I mean, and I learned some things from The Crown. Watching The Crown educated me in certain ways. I did not know that Lord Mountbatten was murdered by a bomb on his boat with some of his grandchildren.
Spoiler, I'm not to that point yet.
Well, no, I'm just saying, but yeah. This is just, I mean, there's sure. lots of history that yeah. I was completely unaware of. So there are certain things that happened that were history that I was cognizant that they happened, but I didn't understand the entire situation around it. So watching it filled in a lot of history that I knew pieces of. So in that way, it was kind of satisfying because I learned a lot more and it connected a lot of the history that I had amassed that was just kind of rolling around in my head for no good purpose.
Here's another problem that I'm having. If you have 100 different people named Prince Edward, Prince Andrew, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, it's like, how many Prince Andrews are there? How many Prince Edwards are there? Yeah, it turns out quite a few. But anyway. Okay, sorry. Back to the Midnight Sky.
Yeah.
you want to dive into the plot, or do you want to hear my observations?
Yeah. Let's go to the plot first, because otherwise we're just going to...
Okay.
We'll just continue to tangentially spiral.
Okay, and I guess I'll pepper in observations as I go here. But the movie, and this is a photocopy. IMDb and Wikipedia have the same plot synopsis. So, okay. So
it must be good.
It's something. So, well, it turns out nothing in this movie is unpredictable. And there's, if you pardon the expression, gravity, there's tension, there's like peril.
Until there isn't.
They fuck it up. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it's very predictable peril. That's the problem. Okay.
Oh, no. From like I said, from 15 minutes, I knew the rest of the movie. I already knew what was happening.
Sure.
Like, every time I just was waiting for the next event because it was, we've seen this movie before in different ways.
Yes, so, we have.
It was just a matter of, oh, I'm just waiting for this to happen. You know, there was a MacGuffin that was a true MacGuffin, I guess, because it was never explained. That was probably the only thing that was intriguing. That those are the kind of things that drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Because I always want to know the details. That was like with the road. That's what drove me crazy about the road, is you never find out what happens.
Yeah.
You don't know what has happened. So, and my brain gets stuck in that pursuit. And takes me out of the movie. In this case, I already knew what the movie was just by the 15 minutes in. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So, okay.
And
so,
then I just let go and enjoyed. And again, visually, it's a gorgeous film.
Oh, it's stunning. And the acting's good. So yeah, no, I was in for the ride for sure. Except there's a part that just ruined it for me. But okay, here we go.
Oh, okay.
So we start with Augustine Lofthouse, played by George Clooney. Who we know from A Very Merry Christmas, The American, Michael Clayton, Ocean's 11, Good Night and Good Luck, South Park, Bigger Longer, Uncut, From Dusk Till Dawn, and Batman and Robin.
Oh, he's been, boy, he's one of our Hall of Famers then.
He is, yeah. There's a couple of heavy hitters here. So, he is an ambitious scientist who works toward finding habitable planets where humanity could expand. One night after giving a presentation at a gala, he meets Gene Sullivan, played by Sophie Rundle from Peaky Blinders, and the two begin a romantic relationship. Gene soon leaves him after a pregnancy scare due to his obsession with work and his inability to form bonds with other human beings. Several years later, Augustine encounters Gene again by chance and discovers that they have a daughter, but he chooses not to introduce himself to the daughter. Now, this is not quite as linear. The movie is not quite as linear as this. The movie kind of folds a little bit of these details inside out. You know, you see George Clooney, the terminally ill old man to begin with, and then you kind of see flashes back to when he was a younger scientist and he was looking for habitable planets. I thought they did a really good job with, I don't know if he did the voice, like if he ADR'd his voice on top of the other actor.
I thought so.
Yeah, if he didn't, the other actor should get an Academy Award.
Yes.
Because they didn't really look alike, but the voice was perfect.
Yes. I thought the same thing. I thought he must have dubbed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe it was like some sort of mix.
Auto-tune.
Yeah. A melange of... anyway.
Nice.
So, 30 years later, I know that's a Jason word. 30 years later, in 2049, a cataclysmic event wipes out most of the Earth, killing almost all the population with powerful radiation. Now, as stated here, that's not even necessarily spelled out. I mean, it's spelled out that the world is dead, pretty much.
Well, also, it's because that's what Jesse asked me. I'm like, yeah, but you couldn't use a respirator to avoid radiation. I mean, to a certain degree, if radiation is going to be bad enough that you shouldn't be out in it, breathing a mask is not going to filter enough. You have skin exposed. Like,
I guess it depends on what kinds of radiation. Again, yeah, I'm out of my depth there. So, but he's,
it's unfortunate we don't have a nuclear engineer with us right now.
Well, it turns out, you know, he doesn't like to be invited all the time. And so he just,
we're sorry, Drew. We're still sorry. I'm still sorry.
So Augustine is working in the Arctic. He's some sort of Arctic base, and he's the only one left on the base. Presumably, he's the last man on Earth, right?
Yeah, yes.
And it's not clear where the rest of the people are being evacuated to, but...
Well, I take it back, because, you know, they make, several times they make suggestions that people are underground, so he's not the last man.
Okay, maybe,
he's
right, they're underground.
Above, he's the only terrestrial visitor, inhabitant, man. Right?
That's no, you're right. People are underground.
Yeah, so it's kind of like Metro 2033.
There we go. So, and we have the scene where these people are getting put on a helicopter, and one lady is missing her daughter, and she's told by somebody else that her daughter got on a previous helicopter. So she just has to kind of take that as gospel, and everybody gets on there, and then as the helicopter's ready to go away, Clooney starts walking back toward his base, the helicopter pilot's like, what about that guy? Nope, that guy's staying. Now, here's the first observation.
First of all, the voice of the man, I knew instantly who the actor was.
Which one?
Tim Russ.
Oh, okay.
Played the guy who was talking to him about, you know, if you stop your treatment, you're going to die. He played Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, nice.
So the voice, I mean, he's got a very distinctive voice. So
here's my first observation. Terminally ill George Clooney looks just like David Letterman's everyday retirement look.
I could not figure out who he looked like. He looked like either a strange Warner Brothers cartoon character I couldn't place, or a Sesame Street puppet I couldn't place. But he looked like a caricature of something. I could not place it.
Take a look at David Letterman 2021 or 2020. Retirement Dave looked exactly like terminal George Clooney with long hair and a beard. So, anyway. And by the way, the makeup is good. Don't get me wrong. It's just like, wow, this is David Letterman. he has either radiation poisoning or cancer or something where he has to have dialysis, and he's going to stop taking his medication or stop his treatments, I guess, eventually, because it's just not worth it. And in the meantime, though, he is trying to contact any of the space missions that are outstanding that don't bother coming back to Earth. There's nothing here. Hopefully you found something, but go back. And we look on the board of space missions, and we see, like, all of them are, what, decommissioned or something, except for one.
Inactive,
yeah. Except for one. Which presumably means that they're all dead, right?
That was my assumption, that they went to explore places and the places killed them, or they died en route or in return route.
Yeah. So, but there's still a spacecraft called Aether, who is... Aether. What?
Aether.
Okay.
Aether.
A-E-T-H-E-R.
Old school.
Okay. So, Aether is returning after exploring a habitable moon of Jupiter called K23, which Augustine had discovered. So he's trying to contact this ship, but can't do it because his radio signal isn't powerful enough.
Well, he doesn't know that yet, but what he eventually comes to the conclusion of is that he's not reaching the ship because he has no transmission power, not enough transmission power.
So one night while working, Augustine finds a young girl played by, and I'll mispronounce her Irish name, but Kaylin, maybe? C-A-O-I-L-I-N-N, Kaylin Springall?
I got nothing.
Anyway, it turns out she doesn't speak at all.
She does.
Well, okay. She says one phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she doesn't speak. It's,
by the way, her name's probably like something like Shaolin.
Oh, exactly. But, yes, exactly. Yeah. Like the monks. Yep.
Forgive us, Ireland. We're ugly Americans.
Yeah. Well, we're reasonably attractive Americans. No, we're not. I'm not. Anyway, Jason's very handsome, by the way. If you haven't seen Beavis and Brother Jay, Brother Jay, he's a stone cold fox. He's a snack.
Please. Oh, please.
Okay. So, he tries to contact his previous colleagues, but understand that they're all gone. He wants somebody to come and return and pick up this girl because he can't take care of a child. He's dying. He's given up on himself. He can't be raising a child. He didn't want to raise a child when he knew he bore a child.
So, yeah.
They have this situation, of course, where it's sort of what, like the Odd Couple or whatever, or Bad News Bears or something, where grumpy old man finds a heart because this young girl that needs help, and so
it's Punky Brewster.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah. So it's all groovy except she doesn't speak, and there's very cute moments between them, like where they flip peas at each other across the table, and she draws pictures, and then he finds out her name is Iris. So he grows fond of her, and he starts taking his dialysis treatments and everything. But then he's going to set off for the base right on the Arctic, where there's an antenna powerful enough to send a transmission. So here's where the Revenant part starts, where they start their first day snow machine trip, then a foot trek. After a very harrowing experience with ocean ice breaking up, and yeah, anyway. So, and he loses his dialysis machine.
Would never have survived the water. Never have survived that.
Yeah, he would not have. Well, he wouldn't, even if he got himself out of the water, or she got him out, or Deus Ex Machina got him out of the water, he would have frozen to death.
Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah. So anyway, now this is all happening at the same time as the ether is traveling back from K-23, and we start off with the dream sequence where we have Felicity Jones, who plays Sully, and she's the one who played Jet Tila in Rogue One, and she wakes up after she has a dream that she's been left on the planet. By the way, I think her name was Jyn Erso on Rogue One, and Jet Tila is a chef that's on the cooking channel. So it's a joke for just me, apparently. Anyway.
Okay.
So she wakes up from a dream that she's been left, and so she immediately goes and tells the commander of the ship, who happens to be her partner, David Oyelowo, I believe his name is. He's Commander Edelwol.
Adewale,
yes. And we know David from Interstellar and Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And, of course, it's very cute because she says, I'm angry at you because you left me on the moon in the dream. And then she has some, we have lots of 2001 sort of scenes exploring the ship because we got this gravity because there's some centrifugal force going on. And so they go from either end of this spinning big long stick, and it's all very cool. And it seems like everything on board the craft is all 3D printed. Like the entire,
it certainly looks like it.
Yeah, the entire ship looks like it just came out of a 3D printer. So they end up, they're trying to reach home, but they're curious because they can't reach like NASA. They can't reach South America, or Australia or whatever. So they can't reach either hemisphere for communication, so that is concerning to them. And so they think there's something wrong with their equipment.
Yeah, they tried, but not only, it's worse than that, because they even tried going through back channels of countries they're not supposed to contact. So
yeah, and other aircraft, other spacecraft.
And so, they believe at this point that their communication system is just not working somehow. Yes. There's something malfunctioning, even though that it reports that it's fine.
Yeah. Because there's only a couple of people in this, and George Clooney is with a girl who doesn't speak. You never hear his name spoken except like four times in this movie. Now the rest of the crew on the ship, you hear their names here and there. But anyway, so Clooney gets to his other base after again an unsurvivable, normally Revenant style foot trek, and gets brief contact with the ether before the ether hits some sort of meteor storm. Or
because, of course, they ended up having to go outside of their normal trajectory because something happened that no one can explain.
Yes. Yeah. Because reasons.
Yes.
Yeah, as my daughter would say.
So they made it all the way out there with the navigation system, and somehow on the way back it just pooped.
Yeah. Or conditions change or something. Oh, yeah, that's what they got off. They got off course. They regained their course, but they didn't know how far they're off. And by the as they're trying to work that out, and then they're getting this, they're suddenly getting a radio transmission from Earth, but they're interrupted because suddenly they're traveling through this whole like meteor field or something.
Yeah. And so their ships, they sustain a fair bit of damage.
Oh, yeah. They are
not catastrophic, but no. Enough that they had to take stock of things and repair.
Well, it takes out their radar, so their ability to see other incoming obstacles, and also the communications, which is, you know, the only way to talk to things. So they have to go out and do a, they have to put together replacement parts, and then they're going to go out and do a spacewalk to fix these things. And the people doing the spacewalk are, of course, Sully, and by the way, we find out Sully's pregnant, and we have the commander.
We knew Sully's pregnant, though, from the moment she wakes up.
Yeah, but didn't we know for sure when they went put her under the scan?
Yeah, but I just assumed that she was pregnant.
Oh, well, there you go.
From the get-go when she got out of bed, so.
Well, that could be. I mean, I don't know, because I wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't looking for signs of pregnancy.
Oh,
but the flight engineer Maya, who's the one that put her under the scan tool that where she could hear the baby's heartbeat, whatever. She's played by Tiffany Boone. She's never done a spacewalk before, so she and Sully are going to go out, and then the commander's going to go out just to kind of supervise and maybe keep an eye on them both. And they're all fixing the stuff, and Maya is really freaked out. She's all vomiting beforehand, so that's all sort of cute and weird. But there's actually, I thought this part of it was really good, where Maya sees a drop of blood floating inside of her helmet, and is like, "Oh no, help me!" Because while they're out fixing the stuff, after they get it all fixed, they turn the radar on and radar on, yeah. So they get hit by more debris, whatever, and somehow Maya gets critically injured, as it turns out. So I thought maybe she was going to like get untethered for some reason, just float out into space forever.
That's what I expected, actually. Yeah.
So they
that's actually what I thought happened for a while.
Yeah.
Until it dawned on me that there were still three of them. I'd expected her to go slinging out somewhere.
Exactly.
But I had expected her, once she was puking constantly and it was her first spacewalk and they made a big point of it, I figured she was a red shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She might as well have been wearing a red suit.
Yep.
Yeah. And of course, pretty soon, didn't show it, everybody was wearing red suits because of her. So, yeah. So there was something, actually, she had some sort of penetrative wound. And when they put her in the decompression, or they put them all in the little port to get back in, and they repressurized the port, and it took like 30 seconds. And, they're trying to put some emergency like space pressure bandages on her, but there's so many drops of blood floating, and she knows it, and they know it, and so, you know, it's all very dramatic, but it's also kind of TV level dramatics. It's like almost like a Star Trek the original series sort of melodrama, right?
It was a tad over the top, I think is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it was just melodrama, right? I mean, because we knew it was going to happen. So we have the death, and that's all very sad. And then Ether finally ends up talking to Clooney, and Clooney's like, you can't come home. There's nothing home. There's nothing here. You can't come home. There's no safe place to land. Now, we had met other crew members along the way. By the way, there's only five crew members, right? There's Sully, and then the commander, and then Maya, and then there's the pilot, correct, Tom Mitchell, and there's some sort of maybe a scientist or an engineer or something, Sanchez. The pilot is played by Tom Mitchell, who is actually He's played by Kyle Chandler. Kyle Chandler from Godzilla, King of the Monsters, Godzilla vs. Kong, Zero Dark Thirty, and Argo. But in my mind is our generation's Robert Forster. He is going to go home. Like, one of the things they had shown is they have these, like, holographic images that they can kind of go into that have, like, holographic images of their family and friends. And
that are supplemented with real props. Yeah. They have a room that adjusts to props, which I thought that was actually pretty clever. I give them credit for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, like I said, there's some good stuff in here, for sure. And it was all very sad. He's going to go home because he has wife and children at home, and he promised to return home to them. So he is going home. And so he's bound and determined. It doesn't matter what this guy says. We'll find a place to land because I will find my family. And when they finally get their first view of Earth, and Earth looks a bit toasty. Sort of Pizza the Hut kind of thing.
It really didn't look good.
No. Very soupy. And
it
kind of
looked
that,
like a marshmallow that was just starting to burn and stick over the campfire.
Yeah. So I guess presumably that's crazy radiation, devastation, whatever. I don't know. Who knows? Whatever it was cataclysmic. So they're like, he's like, yeah, okay, I know that this is like, that you can't, the ship can't land. I get it. But I am taking one of the two shuttles and I am going down to Earth. And the captain's like, okay, I understand. And then Sanchez, who's, again, he's the engineer or something, and he apparently has looked upon Maya as kind of as her father figure, or he had kind of a parental
relationship. Well, he explains that he had a daughter who died.
Oh, yeah,
there you go. And that Maya was about her age, and that he often thought that they would have been friends.
And kind of projects that onto Maya.
So, because these people have ostensibly spent, I don't know how long, on a ship and a return trip back and forth to this distant moon. I imagine they'd be pretty lonely, but also kind of close.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of forced into community, so.
Yeah, and they all seem to get along. There was no, unnecessary tension among the crew in this
particular. Yeah, this wasn't Aliens.
Yeah. Sanchez says, you know what, buddy, to the Robert Forster, Mitchell, the pilot. He's like, you know what, I'm coming with you. And were they presuming he was going to go with them and then they were somehow going to return? They weren't returning, right? They weren't coming back to the ship. The ship was going to do this slingshot mission. And
well, he made the point that it takes two to pilot the ship.
Yeah.
And if the one guy's staying behind, there's no way for him to have come back.
Here's problem number one. There's only five members of this crew.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which are the rest of humanity?
Yeah, well, that's the other problem. But one of them dies, and two of the other ones are going to go away. So it's just basically two people. If it took five people to pilot this craft, you'd think, like, when they did the spacewalk, right? There was somebody on the inside and somebody on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is going to be tough, especially when one of them is about to be super pregnant.
Yeah.
But we're not worried about that part of it. So this is where.
Well, at this point, you're the last two people alive. You're the last two people left in humanity. So at that point, I don't really know that it matters. I mean, it's pretty fatalistic. You're not coming back from this. You're not going to restart the race.
Well, okay, except that you're right. If there are people underground, although again, the people underground don't get out of there, they're not going to survive either, right?
Well, if it's nuclear and there's a nuclear winter or there's radiation, then they can only survive so long underground until you run out of air or water or food, and certainly power, depending on your source. So unless technology advanced a great deal in the next 28 years, because it was, what, 2049, right? Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know how many people would have survived, but ostensibly they're going back to this planet. The reason they were looking for planets is for a new planet to go to.
Oh, yeah. Right? And K-23 was a viable planet. Like, they came back with good news.
Yeah. But where were all those other people? So were all the people being evac'd in the beginning going underground?
I'm learning from you that that's probably the case. They must have all been going underground. because they weren't all being sent into space. Unless there was a much longer time between that and I didn't get a sense of how long it was between the time that he waved off that final helicopter and the time that he started looking for Kraft to find, and then he found the little girl. Because if that had been a year or more, then maybe all those people got into a spaceship. But if not, then they would have had to just go underground. Or were killed because they couldn't get to anywhere safe.
That would make more sense that they just helicoptered somewhere to like a shelter to go underground. Yeah. Then that's why he would think he could call them back, is because they wouldn't be.
Yeah, there we
go. In theory, they wouldn't be too far away.
Yeah, so somebody could take a helicopter back and pick her up and then go back underground.
Right.
That makes sense.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, okay. And then, of course, at this point, Augustine, George Clooney, we already see him lose his only dialysis machine. He is kind of stuck in the top of the world observatory or whatever. And he's talking to Sully over the radio because she's the communication officer or whatever, or that's one of her jobs. And they finally tell each other what's going on. And when Sully finds out who he is, or actually when she and the commander find out who he is, they're both impressed because he's a freaking, he's the guy that found K-23. He's the guy that had proposed that they could do all this stuff, this colonization. So they're honored to be talking to him. And of course, this is when we find out that, turns out, her mother knew him. And her name is Iris. And that's when we learn that Iris, who has been hanging out with George Clooney, not talking, is a figment of his imagination.
Go figure.
Yeah.
You mean he was dead the whole time?
Exactly. Okay. And so before succumbing to his illness and the spacecraft does a slingshot around the Earth and goes back where it came from. Sully tells her that he's proud to have talked to her, and she describes K-23 to him. And then the part that pisses me off happens. This is where the movie just ends, right? They've had this father-daughter conversation over the radio. They're never going to meet each other again. He's going to die. She's going to go off and colonize whatever, right? They could have stopped the movie here, right? They could have fade to black with a little bit of hope. Like, she should have said, we'll be colonizing and we'll name our first child after you, whatever, right? He could have done that. But no, you know what they do? He signs off from the radio transmission on his side. They sign off on her on their side. And then we get a shot of the commander and Sully, who are at their computer stations or whatever on the spaceship, and the credits start to roll and you hear the music and they are just doing office work.
Yeah.
They're just like nonchalantly okay, well, I'm going to go do this and here I'll be pushing some buttons and there's nothing frantic about it. It's just okay, just back to doing office work. What a fucking dull ending.
And my observation at this point, I'll send you here. Let me send you a picture.
Okay.
If I can, maybe. So as they were punching buttons on consoles, mm-hmm. Where the hell did you go? Stupid mofo. And the picture is represented. There are two of those on the console desks that they are typing.
That's funny.
And it was so jarring that it actually... I had to pause the movie. I was laughing pretty hard. So
they were those actual things?
Oh, I don't know that they were those actual things, but that's certainly what they looked like.
So
that's
what Jason sent me a picture of a McDonald's touchscreen cash register.
From the 80s.
From the 80s, yes.
I sent a picture of the Stockholm McDonald's, because that's where I found the picture from. But that's what it reminded me of when I saw it. It's funny how the brain works, because it pissed me off, because I'm like, that is, first of all, you have all these flat panels everywhere and then you have these weird metal boxes. Okay. None of that makes any sense, but you're in the future and you have printed everything. Modular. Everything's printed and modular and whatever. Why do you have this metal box? especially on a ship where stuff gets tossed around, you're not going to want a metal piece on top of a bunch of glass. Anyway, so that just that took me out of it. But then I was like, that looks like a McDonald's cash register. And then I just obsessed about it for like 15 minutes. So,
So here was what I was concerned about. And again, if you had left it on a more dramatic note, even, okay, how about this? Instead of the father-daughter thing, end it with a hopeful smile between the expectant parents of the last Earthling. Like, that would have been cool, too. Aww, right?
I was waiting for her to go into labor at an opportune moment.
But, okay. And here's where I'm not a genealogist, right? I'm not. I went to medical school. Never. But if you're going to populate a brand new planet, I think you need more people than two. Three is the minimum you would want, because unless you start talking about some Lot's daughters kind of action or like brother sister stuff, which you know can get kind of dicey. I mean, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But two is not a hopeful number. Again, I mean, granted, they have three, but one of them is related to the other two. So it's going to be a little bit complicated. So no matter how many Papa Pilgrim kids come out of her.
Oh,
I'm sorry. This is not a hopeful ending to me. This is nothing but sad.
No, that's what I was saying. They are going back to the extinction of the race.
Oh, everybody's going to die.
Until we discuss that there's people underground. So now there's subterranean Metro 2033 people. So maybe there's hope for humanity, but...
people underground could just as easily end up being... I haven't played Metro 2033... Are the people underground zombies?
I don't know.
Okay, because what happens to me in my mind, maybe I don't have as hopeful an outlook as some people, but to me, this is a post-apocalyptic story with no happy ending. It is the road on Earth.
Kind of.
And there's not going to be a happy ending there. Let's say they go back to K-23, right? And they repopulate the species when everybody looks alike at the picnic because they're all related to each other. Oh, well. There's going to be some hemophilia, I'm just telling you. And let's say in a couple generations, they send back another ship just to see how things are going on Earth, right? It could be like mole people. It could be like people from, spoiler, The Descent. It could be all sorts of bad stuff. The hills have eyes, indeed. So
there is a lot. I mean... that's why I'm interested in the book. I want to see how much of the book does take the story.
Yes, I want to know.
Poorly worded sentence. I want to know the different direction the book versus the movie, or if the book is as bad as the movie.
I want to see. Do they jump ahead like Arthur C. I want to know about this sequel. I don't read it. I want to hear somebody talk about the sequel, where it talks about whether it's a bunch of Children of the Corn people that are coming back. And they're going to make contact with the Mole Man.
I will be doing the research. Okay. So I will do the heavy lifting for you.
Because when the second alien species shows up and finds this whole thing, they're going to be like, what the fuck happened here? This is a backstory to a serious video game where the Earthlings here and the Earthlings on K-23, you get halfway through the game and have to learn through a series of cutscenes that these are related to one another. And maybe you have to wait till like the third installment of the video game to find this out.
This is not your average Halo franchise.
I was thinking more like sort of the Skyrim kind of thing where it's, there's lots of Japanese role-playing stuff where it's like, oh yeah, this was this all along. Anyway. So any more notes on The Midnight Sky?
Let me see.
Did you like it?
So like is a strong word here. It was fine. It was not. This is like a C movie. I'm not going to watch it again. It wasn't awful. I mean, it was entertaining, and as much as it killed to it was way too long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It could have been a much shorter. There could have been many better choices to make this movie shorter. I don't understand the scene where he shoots the guy in the plane, the crash plane. I don't know why that was a thing.
He had to put him out of his misery.
Yeah, but I don't... Why?
But to show the horror? Like, this is a children's... This should have been a Disney movie, like, starring Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. I mean, the fact that he's terminally ill... Okay, so maybe it would be like... I don't know. I don't know who this movie is for.
Yeah, so... these are my notes. 2049, he has weeks to live. And then I wrote, oh, is she deaf or mute or deaf and mute or just annoying?
Oh, wait, hold on. Wait. So he has weeks to live. So that gives you the timeline.
If he stops treatment.
Okay.
They say if you stop your treatment, you only have weeks to live.
Okay.
So no telling how long he's going to live. And then they have this big, he has this big speech about Polaris being the most important star as it will always find your way home. That never has a payoff.
That's true. You're right.
I suspect, however, in some cutscene somewhere, it was how the Ether managed to find its course again.
That's how he found his way without any equipment up to the base.
Yeah. And I wrote, this giant megaship with all this technology is magically off course somehow. Okay.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't have a pre-plotted route. I wrote that their holodeck looked really fun. And then I wrote that, the silver computer pads atop their consoles look like McDonald's cash registers.
That's so funny.
And that was the sum of my notes. So... this is probably a C movie. I mean, it's well acted for the story they have. I don't think the story is good. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful film. It was filmed. I mean, it had some good sets. It had some good locations. It was really nice to watch visually.
Sure.
Intellectually, it wasn't really.
No, there's no there.
Yeah. And again, as we've said, these are all stories we've seen before. These are totally none of
better.
This was new. Yeah. Yeah. So none of this was a surprise. This movie was, I would say it was predictable. I didn't predict all of it, but it was fairly predictable. You could really see where it was going. There wasn't any subtlety in this movie.
Well, I mean, there was tension, right? Because I didn't know how they were going to get out of their predicaments.
There were some scary things. That's the thing. They did good with some of the tension because like the birds. That was freaky.
Yeah.
Like the birds flopping around.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, that's a little scary. The scene with the wolves in the mist, that was kind of scary.
I was waiting for him to put airline bottles between his fingers.
The Liam Neeson reference?
Yes.
Okay. I got that.
You didn't actually watch that movie, did you?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
That was me too. Yeah.
But the snow machine and the water thing, I was done.
I think we knew too much.
Yeah.
There was no way for him. I mean, he did not have enough equipment to survive that.
No one would.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. There is no way you could write your way out of that.
Yeah. So that was there. So there were some problems with this film, clearly. So, it was a C. I give it a C. It's if you like sci-fi stuff and you just want something to kill a couple hours, this will kill a couple hours, but. It's not intellectual.
This should have been straight to Sci-Fi Channel, though. That's the problem. I mean,
one of the IMDb notes is this is a 2-hour movie that should have been 20 minutes.
Well, that's it.
Should have been a short story.
It's one of those things like, hey, couldn't this have been an email? I don't know. So I'm a little disappointed with this one. It's not, again, it's not the worst thing ever. I guess I'm not as much angry with it as I'm just disappointed. I hold Clooney to a, I mean, he didn't write it, but he's the director. He had the power to at least edit the ending better.
Yeah, but was this put together in the middle of Pandemicville?
Well, I know that the pregnancy was unexpected, so he just wrote it in.
Yeah.
But, which is fine. Oh, by the way, without the pregnancy, you don't even know Captain could have been shooting blanks. They could have been back there to be just, you know, dinks on K-23 until they died.
Yep.
They could have had some really nice, but like tomato plants planted there that no one was going to eat because there was no humans.
Yeah, there was a lot of open questions that are never going to be solved. So yeah,
maybe in the sequel they actually make contact with another ship that's headed back from somewhere else, and they team up and they go to K-23.
Maybe.
And there's like six more people at least, and so you have a fighting chance to repopulate, or actually populate for the first time.
Yeah.
And colonize an actual planet or moon, whatever.
Although the facts in IMDb, if they can be believed, say that there's no way you could live on a moon that close because the radiation of the planet would kill you.
Maybe. Although, so, again, I mean, you're willing to take that risk at this point.
Yeah.
And by the way, this could be a snapshot into our near future. If you look at the climate scientists. This could be.
This was definitely a commentary.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But, well, except that you're right. I mean, somehow we fucked it up, but it didn't really say how. Like, if it was a radiation, so presumably it was something that maybe we caused. Maybe it was a war. But we don't know.
Yeah. I got nothing. I was going to speculate, but I don't even care.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. It's hey, they didn't bother to write the story. Why should we rewrite the ending for them? So,
anyway. That's a fair point.
And would I have been angry at a Deus Ex Machina thing where it all becomes okay at the end of it? Maybe not. I may have not liked that either.
I don't know that any end of this movie was short of like rescuers liberating people from the basements and shelters would have.
Hold on. Maybe the thing ends with like the scene of them doing their just menial work on the McDonald's cash registers. And then all of a sudden, boom, George Clooney wakes up in Las Vegas and it's Ocean's 14 and he's Danny Ocean. He just had this dream. We're gonna do a heist on a space station.
Uh-huh.
Or in the Musk facility, SpaceX.
Yeah.
Hey, what better heist than to steal a spacecraft?
I guess. I mean,
Elon Musk goes out to the launch pad and his spacecraft has been jacked.
Outer space is probably international, is it not? International territory? International waters?
Well, you know what? There's all these rules that used to exist about space, about how there's no weapons in space and blah, blah, blah. Now, whether there's actually weapons in space already, who knows? I'm kind of into those conspiracy theories. However, now that we have space fucking force, yeah, we're just going to militarize space. It'll be great. Space force. And the fact that now, if you criticize Space Force, the Defense Department says, don't be unpatriotic and mock one of the military's new branches. It's like, okay. All right. Oh, well. Okay. So, by the way, I don't know. If I were Drew, I would say this is not worth it. It's pretty, but it's pretty forgettable, too.
Maybe if you watched it with the sound off. Doing something else.
I like the accents, though.
Yeah.
I even didn't mind Sweet Caroline.
Oh. See, I fast-forwarded through that. I couldn't sit through that.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Hands.
Oh, God. I just, as soon as I started it, I was like, I'm so glad I have this new Apple remote. I can just scroll right past it.
You know what? I give them credit. They did not go, bum, bum, bum. Because it's already been done. And is done in sports arenas and whatnot.
Yes.
The next day.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And wait. We're not done yet. So it's been like 18 hours, basically, since we last recorded. And in that time, Brother Jay, who is a... I'll let him describe himself, but I'm going to suggest... Not only did he want to like this movie more than he ended up liking it, but he went the extra mile and speed round, listen to the book on Audible.
Well, I listened to it not from Audible. I listened to it from my local library.
Still. And by speed round, I don't mean that you necessarily listen to it on high speed. I just mean you dove into it and finished it in a day.
Yes, correct. In a single day, from start to finish yesterday, I turned it on when I started, when I found it, and then I listened until I was complete.
Okay. And so this is called Good Night Midnight, something like that? Good Morning Midnight.
The book is Good Morning Midnight, a novel by Lily Brooks Dalton.
Okay.
There are some other books that have similar titles, so you have to be careful. My goal was, I wanted to like the movie more than I did, because it has elements of all the things in a sci-fi movie that I would love, in theory.
And it was beautiful.
It was. And so, but I think as you and I have already discussed, we've already seen this movie. So in different pieces in other movies, sometimes done better. So I wanted to see if this was close to the book, or if there were some choices that made the book possibly and most likely better than the movie.
In other words, whose fault was this?
Yes. Who can I point the finger at? I did run through the whole book in a day. I was fairly attentive. I wasn't doing too much multitasking, although again, anytime I'm listening to a podcast or a book, I'm usually multitasking. But yesterday, I was trying to stay a little focused.
If I unitask on listening to a book, I will multitask and take a nap.
I can't nap. I wish I could.
So, book review time.
Yeah.
Wait. What's the alteration we could do for not in a creepy way that involves books? I'll have to think on it.
Yeah.
Because our fashion podcast will be called Not in a Creepy Runway.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, our cooking food podcast is Not in a Creepy Way.
Not in a Creepy Library? I don't know.
Not in a Creepy Library. We'll work on it. We'll work on it. Okay, anybody have any ideas, send a message to show@notacreepyway.com.
Yeah, I got nothing. I'm not the creative side of this talent, so... So I can go through the differences in the story that were...
Well, okay. I want to ask for a spoiler first.
Sure.
Whose fault is it? Are we pointing the finger at Lily Brooks Dunn, whatever? Or are we pointing the finger at George Clooney?
It's George Clooney's fault.
George Clooney's fault. Do you hear that? He may be a billionaire or half a billionaire, whatever. Sorry, George. You don't win them all. This was your fault.
Well, I suspect the changes
George didn't write the screenplay, right?
I have no idea. I didn't. See, now you're asking questions. Let's find out, shall we?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're more
I'm typing your favorite character. I didn't think I'd be going back to this, so.
Yeah, by the way, I dragooned you into this whole thing, but... Because when you told me that you listened to the whole thing, I was like, "Oh no, we need to talk about this."
Well, no, it's a nice.
You needed closure.
The screenplay was by Mark L. Smith.
That sounds like a fake name.
No, it's not. He's known for The Revenant.
Well, which is what George Clooney was copying off of.
Let's see.
Wait! I can already see what the problem was. He wanted to spice up the Revenant action in the movie. He probably didn't give two shits about the space element, the gravity element. Because remember, the elevator's pitch was Revenant meets Gravity.
He wrote Gravity. So he apparently wrote the screenplay for the untitled Quentin Tarantino Star Trek project.
Cool.
He wrote what's in pre-production of the 39 Steps. He wrote the screenplay for Overlord, the screenplay for The Revenant, the screenplay for Martyrs.
For Martyrs?
Yeah.
Martyrs, the one with the Japanese girl in the front cover?
I don't know.
the horror movie Martyrs?
Troyhan Belisario as Lucy.
What's the plot? Not synopsis, but what's the quick plot summary? Or
Anna rushes to help her friend Lucy, who was viciously abused as a young child, clean up the aftermath of the revenge she visited upon her abductors 15 years later.
Are the Asian looking girls in there? Maybe this is it. Yeah. Weird.
I've already derailed this.
I'm sorry.
I'm not seeing a lot of Asian
Martyrs. Maybe she's not Asian. Maybe that's my mind playing tricks.
It's not.
Oh, rated. Hold on. No, it's not the same.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm thinking of 2008's Martyrs instead of 2015's Martyrs.
Apparently, the 2009 The Hole was written by this guy. He knows your deepest fears.
Oh, so he wrote the remake.
Like the American 2008 version.
French horror film Martyrs.
Ah.
And here, here's a couple of IMDb reviews. I don't know why we're shitting on this guy, except that the first five reviews are 4 2s and a 1 on a scale of 1 to 10. And one was, a polished, well-executed turd is still a turd.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's hard to argue that.
Less violence, less emotion, less quality. Hacked to shit and not in a good way. Anyway, so, okay. So, what's this guy's name? Samuel Smith?
Mark L. Smith.
Okay, sorry. Mark L. Smith, you and George Clooney have a debt to pay to society.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you've managed to make a mediocre movie out of... did you enjoy the book?
I thought it was a good book. It's a book I would have liked had I not seen the movie.
Sweet.
Because I already knew the plot, so really I was only listening to the book to see if the book truly was better. And had I only read the book or listened to the book and not seen the movie, it would have been 1,000 times better.
And you would have looked forward to the movie even more.
I would have, but then I would have been disappointed because the movie would have sucked.
Okay.
So...
All right, so
yeah,
let's get to the nitty gritty of this whole thing. What are the differences?
So the opening, so the first part of the movie.
This is explaining the global cataclysm.
Nope. Okay. Nope. Unexplained war is the only real thing that they talk about.
Which is fine.
Yeah. He's not under any kind of chemo or terminal illness.
He's just a guy.
He's just an old guy.
Okay.
Cranky old guy at a research station.
Is everybody underground?
Well, so the book says everybody. So through the end of the book, you find supposedly everybody's evacuated through some kind of national order to military bases. But that's the end of it. Nobody knows anything beyond that.
Okay.
So, but we find out through some other investigation through other means that there was a mass evacuation order. Everybody was evacuated. The Barbo station, which was the research facility he was at, got evacuated and he refused to go.
Okay.
So about a year or so after, he discovers Iris.
Okay. The mute girl.
The mute girl. In the interim, the movie moves back and forth and the narrative is between one chapter is... Augie. And one chapter is Sullivan.
Okay.
So each chapter bounces back and forth. So you're getting a Earth perspective and a spaceship perspective.
Okay. Is this the last spaceship in the human fleet?
In the book, there's no indication of any fleet but this ship. This is it.
Okay. All right.
This was simply an exploration vessel. It was just exploring. That's all it was doing. It wasn't noble. I shouldn't say it wasn't noble, but the movie made it seem like they were searching for a planet because they had to leave. At least that's what I took from it. That's not in this book, I don't think. I don't feel that from this book.
So this was just like a science. If Elon Musk just says, hey, we're going to get to Mars first and send out some people.
Right.
And they're on their return trip.
Right. And on their return trip, everything goes quiet and they don't know anything, but also everything's silent. But we have some backstory because we go into some history of Augustine and his past and the issues that he had, and that he had a daughter in the past. And, you know, when she was growing up, you know, he didn't ever contact her or his ex-partner wife, whoever. But he did send gifts on like her fourth birthday, her fifth birthday, her sixth birthday, up until her 10th birthday, at which point the gift was returned because they had moved and not forwarded their information. So he lost touch when she was 10 years old.
Okay.
Which was...
So he has no idea if the gifts were actually even received or presented to the daughter.
Correct. But that was, you know, 30-some years ago, right? So that was in the past. You move forward, and on the ship, you see that they're traveling back home after this mission where they were exploring this planetary body, and they're trying to do some science. There are six people on the ship. There's six crew members.
And so one more than the movie.
One more than the movie.
Was the other one another lady or another guy? Were they the same names?
No. Okay. There was another who, I think there was, I'm getting confused.
Oh, that's fine.
I think there was an additional male. I think okay. There was just another dude.
So still 4 and 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was
is
two
Maya
females.
Present?
No. Not as Maya. She's known as Devi.
Okay. Debbie.
Devi, D-E-V, V, Victor.
Oh, Devi. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're just going right back home. That's the whole thing. They're going back home.
Yeah, their right? job is done, except to go home, right?
Right. They're just going home. And they have a communications failure. One of their dishes apparently breaks loose in transit. And they have to go replace, repair, and whatnot. And there's some discussion back and forth about how they need to accomplish that. And they have the parts, but that'll require them going out. And they do go on the big thing about how Debbie's really never been on a spacewalk that much, and she's inexperienced. So that part, okay, so we're with that part. But, by the way, we're spoiling the book as much as we're spoiling the movie.
It's fine. Yeah. It's what we do.
So they're still going home. They're still traveling home, right? So they didn't have some weird course loss correction that they needed to do, but basically they're still traveling, but they don't have any communications. And right now they think communications are important because they were listening for other satellites and probes around to see if they could get, if they wanted to see that it wasn't them.
Yeah.
Because if they could get like the Voyager satellite or any of the probes around Mars or Jupiter, you know, if they could hear other probes, it would mean that it wasn't them.
Exactly.
It was Earth. So that's why they needed to fix the dish. Well, Devi and Sullivan are out doing this repair. And Devi isn't experienced, of course, and she doesn't notice her oxygen level in the suit. And so she runs out of oxygen at the end of basically the end of the ship where they're doing the repair. And there's no way to get her back in time to get her oxygen.
Mm.
Because even if they got her back to the airlock takes time to recycle.
And it's not like underwater where you can take out your scuba regulator or whatever and throw it in somebody else's mouth.
Correct. So basically she suffocates to death in her suit.
While they watch.
While Sullivan watches, yeah.
Oh.
So there's some trauma over that. And then Sullivan has to finish the install of the new dish and bring her back. And that's traumatic, and so there's that. In the meantime, on Earth, Augie and Iris kind of do some things around Barbo Station.
Okay. Iris, the new girl.
Yeah, Barbo Observatory.
Okay.
So it should be, the distinction is, so in the book, the observatory doesn't have any power to transmit. That's why they have to go to another station.
Ah, okay.
Because it's just an observatory. It's not meant to have any kinds of transmitting ability. It's really just listening, right? He and Iris take a trip and they pack stuff and they were exploring the grounds of the observatory and they found snow machines and they found gear and they found all the stuff. So they hop on snow machine and they start their little journey towards the Lake Haslin, right? I think it's the same name in the book. The plane scene, the crash plane where he shoots the dude dead, that doesn't happen. The wolf scene doesn't happen. There is a wolf scene early in the book, but it's entirely different.
Okay.
It's imagined differently, and Iris is not in peril. She's okay. petting the wolf.
Oh, okay.
But he, Augie, kills the wolf,
yeah,
which traumatizes Iris.
Sure.
So there.
And he can tell from her face because she doesn't speak.
Well, she does. And so she does start speaking, though. So throughout the book, she speaks.
Okay.
She starts speaking more and more.
Okay. So it's not just one line.
Nope.
And then you're drowning.
Correct. So they have a snow machine trip. They're going to Lake Haslin, and there's no cargo container that they end up in water. That doesn't happen. They do hit a large boulder that's been hidden in the snow and ice, and that breaks the skis off of the front of the snow machine, and so they end up having to walk and camp the rest of the way to Lake Haslin. So that's harrowing.
Sure.
But not as dire, more survivable than if you fell into a bunch of Arctic water.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens. They make the trip to Lake Haslin. They get to Lake Haslin. Lake Haslin is kind of a refuge at this point because it's in a valley, but it's got a big antenna array, but it looks pristine. It's kind of like this bowl in the middle of nowhere that's just been like carved out. And there's some wildlife. There's some Arctic hares. It's pretty quiet. The area is kind of buffeted. They can get some trout out of, or not trout, they call it something else, char out of the lake.
Yeah.
Little fish. There's plenty of food at the station because the station was clearly meant as some kind of survival station for transmitting something. So there's plenty of food. There's plenty of supplies, more supplies than food than the two of them will consume in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And fuel, and they have a generator, and they're fine, right?
And there's no ticking time bomb for him because he's not sick.
No, but he's getting older. I mean, okay. the book makes the point that he's in his 70s and he's becoming more and more frail.
Sure.
And every season that goes past, every winter is harder and harder and harder. And he's finding it harder to get around and get up and do things like shovel snow. And so he's not as able-bodied as he once was. And so he starts spending time in the Radio Shack eventually, which he avoids at first. But he spends time in the Radio Shack trying to get a hold of anybody he can. To no avail. He just keeps trying. Nobody. Back on the ship, the people talk, people are on the ship there trying to find anything they can. And Sullivan manages to contact like the Voyager probe, and she hears that. And so then they start to get distressed because they realize they're not contacting Earth at all anywhere, but they can hear other things.
Yeah.
That's so that much tells them something
distressing.
Yeah. Something catastrophic happened at Earth, which is bad. So there's radio silence almost until the end of the book, almost entirely till the end of the book. As the ether comes towards a range of the planet.
Well, Sullivan is still pregnant, right?
No, there's no pregnancy at all.
Okay.
Nope.
All right.
Nope. No space baby.
Oh,
no.
Is she dating the captain?
Nope. No. I think somebody was boinking somebody else, but I don't think it was any of any consequence. It just was we're in space kind of thing. Also, like the beginning of the movie where you see all these multiple missions of vessels and vehicles going out, none of that happens.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that so in the very beginning, so this just happens to be like mom went out for groceries and on her way back home she realizes there's no home.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything's gone.
Yeah.
Yes. Like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, I don't know why mom gets hurt in this scenario, but still.
So they talk back and forth. They start having a brief conversation. And Augie basically tells Sullivan, there's nothing to come back to. And she's like, well, shit. And so, okay. And so then they're like, okay. And they move on. And so they figure out what they're going to do on the spaceship, and Augie kind of just fades back into the background at Lake Haslin, and eventually he and Iris kind of, they kind of talk some and have some conversations at Lake Haslin, and then he basically like fades away and disappears.
Now, does he ever find out that Iris is Sullivan?
No.
Is Ira Sullivan?
Yes.
Okay.
But I haven't got there yet.
All right, sorry.
So Iris on the ground with him isn't real.
Okay.
Right? Or
yes.
If she is, it's a coincidence, but she is not in any way talked about past his disappearing or his death. They make a big point about him hugging a polar bear and the polar bear enveloping him in a warm hug, and then, you know, he feels a heartbeat, and then they move back to the ship. So I'm assuming that's the metaphor for his death.
Okay.
Is being hugged by a polar bear, as clumsy as that may be, but regardless.
But sorry, I'll let you get to it.
So back on the ship, they dock. Their whole plan was they come back to Earth, they dock with the space station, which they're supposed to do. That's what was the mission plan. And then from the space station, they take the escape pods back to Earth. And the escape pods holds, was it three people per escape, right?
All right.
There was supposed to be two pods. So the six of them would have taken one each down, and they would have both gotten down. Except that it looks like the people that were on the space station used one of the pods to escape, to get back to Earth during the calamity, because the space station was completely vacant.
Ah.
It was operational. Everything was like somebody had just left it, but nobody was there. Nobody was home.
Got it.
So they have to figure out who's going to go back to the planet.
And do they, like, rock, paper, scissors, that thing, or do they...
Well, they drew straws, but then the captain thinks better of it and says, after they've all drawn straws, and there's this big dramatic, like, Sullivan says, oh, I can give up now. I know I'm just going to die in the space station. I don't have to worry about struggle in life and being on the planet that I don't know what's going on and all of this blah, 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 blah. And then the captain says, you know, me and this other guy, we're going to stay on the ship because we're the oldest two. So we're not going to be of any use in a couple of years to, if you need to survive on the planet, we're not good fodder. Like, we are going to slow you down. So we're going to stay up here and do what we can from up here. But the four of you are, the three of you remaining, the three of you are younger and more vital. And so you need to go down. And so Sullivan's like, oh, well, shit. Well, now I have to deal with the fact that I'd just given up and now I'm not. And then so they get in the escape pod and they talk about going back to Earth, and they go back to Earth, and they're on their way back to Earth. And in the escape pod, she and one of the other guys are talking. And that's when he says, he says, it'll be nice to get back to Earth, won't it, Iris? And she goes, oh, it's been a long time since somebody said my first name. And that's when it's revealed that she's Iris.
Wait, so they're not going to turn back to X-23?
Nope.
Wow. Is there a part two to this story?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think this was just the end.
Is she going to land in Lake Havasu or wherever?
Lake Haslin?
Yeah.
Well, they made a big point that there was no way they could tell where they were going to land, and that their odds of survival was like 1 in 10 or something. There was really low odds, because if they landed in water, there's nobody to rescue them.
Yeah, that's not a good deal. Earth is not a good planet to land on if you don't know where you're going to land.
If you land on land, there's nowhere to go to, right? Like, there's nobody's coming to rescue you, period.
Wow.
So, yeah. So that's the end of the book, really.
So was that a satisfying ending for you?
Not really.
Yeah, I was going to say. So the movie did not have a satisfying ending. The book did not have a satisfying ending.
Correct.
The book was more real. The movie was more action-packed, right? Which makes sense, I suppose.
Yes.
I mean, we both agreed we hated the Arctic peril because it was not realistic. You could just tone it down just a tiny bit and it would be fine, but they didn't. They went too far.
So this is what the author says about not declaring what the emergency was on the planet. This is a quote from Ms. Brooks Dalton. For me, and for this story specifically, the minutiae of whether humanity falls by way of epidemic or warfare or asteroid or climate change was so much less interesting than what happens after. I wanted to keep the focus on the characters, to detail the emotional and psychological toll of such a catastrophe without dropping into the mechanics of how the world might continue in the wake of it. I was most interested in the individual issues as opposed to the social. There are lots of fantastic post-apocalyptic books that delve into social issues, but I wanted to write something that had a different focus.
Is there? Do we have any indication of how she liked the movie?
No. Let's see. I'm just scanning through some other comments that are in here. Blah, blah.
Well, that's simultaneously fascinating and, but ultimately also unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Because they're presumably just going to their death. Actually, of the two things, the Clooney movie is more hopeful at the end, even though, again, had they ended it 30 seconds earlier with her talking to her dad and at least one of them figuring out who is who, and then she just had to glance at the father of her unborn baby and smile and know that the future has got some hope, then they could stop it. Then it fades to black and throw roll credits. Do not show them putting up the Keurig pods and putting paper in the laser printer and all those other like mundane things. It still ticks me off that they ended it with office work.
Oh,
like the last two people on Earth, and they're just doing office work with their goddamn McDonald's cash register. But what can you do?
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
Yeah, I know. So,
Well, thank you for coming back to talk to me about this, because it's the closure I needed if it's not the closure I wanted.
Well, again, like I said, had I read the book before I'd seen the movie, I would have liked the book a lot more. I don't like the movie anymore, having listened to the book, but I do think the book was... objectively, I can say the book was definitely better than the movie. And I understand the choices in the movie which were to add some drama and tension, probably because God knows that's what you apparently have to have in every movie. But I think what was added wasn't to the movie's success. They could have done close to the book and I think done better.
Yeah.
So they filled in so many blanks that the book didn't, that you're just locked into that story now.
Mm.
So, I don't know.
Oh, well. Okay. I guess all right. Mark L. Smith, George Clooney, I withdraw my castigation. You got to do what you got to do. I didn't like the end of it. You win some, you lose some.
Felicity Jones did say that she was glad that the pregnancy got written in because she got to sit around a lot.
Yeah,
so she was happy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, oh well, okay.
Well, so maybe before it was understood that she was pregnant, maybe the script had for lots of acrobatics at the end during the credit scene.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? So. Yeah. I'm glad I didn't pay for it again.
Yeah.
I didn't pay it. It was a free from the library. So.
I recommend you actually watch Time Crimes.
Time Crimes?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
It's a time travel horror movie kind of thing, but I think it's worth watching. It's pretty clever.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric,